Well, really glad to have another opportunity to bring another consultation as we think about how do we re-enter as a church. And Richard and I both have been really excited about helping to serve both of our associations here in the Tri-County area. And today is going to be great because we're going to get more into some of the pragmatics of things that you really need to be thinking about as you put your plan together for your local congregation. We've been talking about the idea of learning how to drive a car all over again. It's kind of like we're all used to automatic, and then all of a sudden they all go away and you got a stick shift and you got to learn how to use a clutch and shift a gear and then look at your dashboard at the same time. And so we know the challenges are great right now. We're praying for you. And so today we're going to talk about how to look at those gauges a little more carefully, even to kind of, what's the GPS? How do you manage this time of managing both two things, people and the space that you have from a health perspective? I'm so excited about this call today and everyone that's on it. So I want to first introduce two of the guests that I've invited, and then Richard, you're going to invite and introduce yours, and we'll dive in together. So first, I want to thank Rachel Lodeholt for being a part of this call. Rachel was great to be a part of our call last week. Rachel's a registered nurse. She's with the Tenet Corporation Quality Management, and she helps to really think for spaces and how to enter in from a health perspective and a safety perspective. So glad that you're on this call with us, Rachel. Also want to thank Stephen Lodeholt. Stephen's got that nice view in the backyard with the cross behind him. Appropriately so. Stephen's a pastor in Somerville. He's part of Awaken Church, and we're so grateful for Awaken Church's role in our city, in our region. And so I'm glad to have Stephen. Stephen's a pastor. He's going to talk about kind of some process things that they're trying to work through right now, protocols like every church is. And so I'm so glad. The great thing is we've got a husband and wife team here on this call, so I'm excited about that as well. So glad to have you.
Yeah, and as we've been discussing, and the pastors of the Tri-County know that we've been trying to make these things available. Now, one of the things we keep hearing is I'm ready to open. Yeah. We're ready to get together. And so we've been talking about reemerging, putting plans together. And as we've already said, Rachel was with us last week on a health consult. And this week, again, you've introduced the two. I want to introduce two more that are going to help us with, I think, one of the things that has to be bedrock if we're going to reopen, and that is our sanitation plan. Yeah. We've said last week, and we'll say many more times, there's more to reemerging than flipping the light switch and saying, everybody come in. And so with that, we have Terry Abernathy with us today. Terry is with BioPure, her and her husband, Alan, own this company and the franchise for it. And Terry's going to help talk to us in a few moments about just some basic things we need to think about in cleaning and making sure that our sanitation is done more than weekly during this time. We have Dan with State Chemical with us. And Dan is a man that's going to be able to help us understand the dangers of some of these chemicals and the safety behind it, and maybe even some ways to access some of them when we need that. So that is where we're at today, and we really look forward to this, as you and I've said, the YouTube version of the how-to on some sanitation practices.
Yeah, so let's jump in. Rachel, I want to start with you from a health perspective. So we think about people and space, but in particular people, give us just a little bit of some thoughts that you have about what are some things that you're giving some counsel, some things that you're building in the protocols and the medical spaces that you're managing right now.
Yeah, so I could go on and on about this. We'll start from the beginning. So the first things that you really want to think about when you're opening up a facility, where I have a different perspective with the medical side of things, obviously we were not able to prepare for COVID-19, and we were the first people to really be on the front lines of receiving these patients. So really the advantage that we have as the church is we're able to plan a little bit in advance. So I think setting up these calls and going through these things and just logistically starting to think of things we might have not before, 4 months ago, but now we're thinking about now. I think it's important to know a little bit about the virus. And if you've listened to the other sessions, I definitely, if you haven't, please check those out. But an important thing to realize, and I'm going to briefly touch on this, is with COVID-19, it's passed by respiratory droplets. So to put that in more of a layman's terms of understanding, when you cough or when you sneeze and those droplets, basically saliva that come out of your mouth, whenever it gets on surfaces or if somebody has bad hygiene and they cough straight into their hands like that, anything that person touches has now got their germs on it. So that's important with COVID-19 because it's a respiratory droplet. So the droplets that come out of your mouth, but it's also transmitted by touching the same surfaces maybe those droplets have touched. So you think about that even from the front of walking through the door. If they've coughed in their hands in the car and they're now opening the door with their hands are dirty and they're touching that door handle. And I know we're going to have a lot more talking on the call about sanitizing, but that's an important thing to just be thinking about how it spread. Because one of the things that we started to take away in the medical facilities was things that can harbor droplets. So we have typically in a waiting room, you're used to seeing, you know, magazines and toys for the waiting area for kids to play in while they're waiting for their appointment, pens to write with. It's really important when you're looking at these type of things of spread is to reduce that. So what we've done in the medical facility is even getting, instead of having to worry about cleaning pens over and over all day long between people using them, is disposable pens. And if that's something that you're able to implement in your facility, that's a great way. If you've got anybody who signs in on any type of, you know, sign-in sheet, new visitors, that kind of thing, if there's like a running tally and different people are using those pens, make sure you just get rid of them if you have the capability. If not, we'll talk a little bit more on the call about sanitizing that, but that's going to be important too when you're meeting people and greeting people and we're using similar things. You want to get rid of that as much as possible. As far as things sitting out, I know and I have the unique position of doing COVID-19, but also being a pastor wife, campus pastor wife, and we have a lot of items that sit out regularly where people can grab and people can touch and people can take home with them just information about the church. So that's something to think about as well. Luckily, we're in a time of technology, so we can put a lot of our mission statements, our vision statements, even handouts about small groups or whatever that looks like in your facility. It's really important to think about maybe even making sure we're verbalizing that with team members of saying, we've removed this from our facility, but we have posted all your information online and really want to, you know, have you check that out. If not, maybe don't leave everything out and maybe keep those items behind a counter where it's, you know, monitored by volunteers. So that's something that we've done. Obviously, we have patients in the outpatient facilities who need to know information about surgery and we'd want to give them an information packet, but we don't put that out in the open because that's going to be hard. Paperwork's hard to clean. You can clean plastic, you can clean metal, but paperwork is not something that you're typically Lysoling. So I would remove that if possible and just really gear them towards online. Another thing that you want to take into consideration too is just the training of just your volunteers and how you're verbalizing that. So a thing that we do in the medical facility, which I think is something that you really want to take in consideration when you're opening up your facility, is if you want to screen people at the door. So in a medical facility, we're screening patients. We're going through important questions. Have you traveled recently? Have you been in contact with anybody that you know that's COVID-19 positive? Any respiratory illness going on, any coughing, any different smells or taste or headache. There's a lot of different symptoms. A lot of that's on CDC that you can access and it'll give you step-by-step of screening, which is very helpful. So that's something that you're going to want to consider. Do we want to screen people or do we want to take their word for it? If you decide to take the posture of screening, an important thing is to make sure that you're able to verbalize that. Where are we going to go if we have somebody positive? Who do I utilize? Who do I contact? What do I tell this person? You know, at a medical facility, we're able to reschedule patients, and that's not abnormal for us. In a church world, I think about even being a campus pastor wife and how I would want to handle that situation. Obviously, you don't want to, you know, alienate that person or make them feel uncomfortable. You also want to make sure your congregation is safe. So it's how do we isolate them in a loving way, pull them to the side away from people? Who do I contact without making a scene? And then how do I show them that I love them and still care about them? So having follow up with that. And if it's a first-time guest, you're looking at a whole different level. So that's something that you really need to take into consideration on the logistical things of when you're opening up your facility. Obviously, you're starting to see restaurants and things open. The governor's starting to lift some precautions. We're still trying to limit it in small numbers as much as possible right now. But as you all know, things can change week to week, day to day even. And we might see something 2 weeks from now that's different from what it is currently. So another thing that you want to consider is high-risk population is going to be people 65 and up, or anyone with what we call comorbidities in the medical world. So that's basically any kind of hypertension, that's diabetes, that's history of cancer, really any kind of medical condition that could cause you to be immunocompromised or be at a higher risk. So that can start being a larger population when you're looking at that. So you want to look at your congregation. So a congregation that's been around for 50 years, 60 years, hundreds of years, you know, if they have a population of people that's geared more towards that population, that's going to be functioning different than maybe like a church plant of 20-something-year-olds, right? So you need to look at what might work for the congregation, you know, two blocks down might not work for your congregation. So it's just knowing your people. It's also just making sure that they know that they're not going to be alienated if they have to stay home or that they're missing out. And I think a lot of the churches have done a great job about making sure that online platform's being utilized. And that might be an option of having two different, or maybe it's, you know, starting out small instead of opening up the congregation, because you're looking at having to sanitize, and we'll go over that more and more, but sanitizing so many different areas that if you can limit it maybe into like a smaller setting, maybe like a small group, or maybe you have smaller people in your community, maybe even that you're able to look at to where you're not full-blown, you know, 200 plus people on the first day. It's overwhelming for not only your volunteers, your pastors, the people coming in. It's just a lot of new information, a lot of new stuff going on. So that might be something too that you can look at, is what does it look like if we start back smaller? Is that a possibility with the size of our congregation? So I could go on and on for probably two more hours on this alone. So I'll stop with my monologue for the moment and let the others talk. And if there's anything specific, I think those are just some of the things that you have to think about as you open the doors and in the way that the virus is transmitted.
Wow. Thank you, Rachel. That's so helpful. You did so well too, to cover a lot of good information that was practical. Again, I think you're scratching itches right now with leaders as they're thinking about those pertinent, critical things. So yeah, we'll kind of do a round robin after this and talk again. But so Stephen, I can't imagine what your dinner table's like at home. So Rachel's working on the medical side of things in her job, and you're thinking, okay, how do I interpret this and how do I begin to apply it in the local church setting? And man, people really matter as who we are. That's what we do. We serve and move and share with people. So I would love to hear from you as a pastor, as you're thinking about, okay, all these things and implementation of things as we're thinking about spaces and coming into them. Just love to hear some of your thoughts of what you're processing that would help other pastors. Maybe some things they're not even asking themselves, but should be. Would love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for one opportunity to be on here and to get to speak. You're absolutely right. I love the dinner table conversations. I'm able to quickly think about what does that mean for us, especially as Awakened Church in Somerville. But here's one of the big things. You know, like you said, great, Craig, we deal with people. If you simplified it down, we're in the people business. And so therefore we've got two big platforms. We have the people that are currently attending our church, who we would consider our people. And then we have the community that we're in. And I think both of those are very important for us to think about. Any decision that we make, how it impacts both of those, because our community looks to us as a local church and how we're responding to any crisis, and this is no different. So one of the big things is, as you're thinking about, you know, your people and having your doors open again and coming, people coming to your church physically, I think one of the things we're going to have to get adjusted to very quickly is not alienating people with their preferences, because this could be something that, you know, I try and think about particular people in our campus, and what if they make the decision? What if they're not comfortable going out in public without a mask for a whole nother year or more? how are we going to have social norms within our church with somebody that's obviously wearing a mask? That means that's probably a person that's not going to want a handshake or a hug, but how can we still make them feel equally as welcome as someone who doesn't really care about whether or not they're physically touched and whether or not they had a handshake or a hug? So that's really a lot of the creativity and the way we're thinking as church leadership, but wanting to make sure that everybody feels welcome, that everyone, that there's nobody that felt alienated as we re-enter into gathering again. But one of the big things that Rachel touched on, I think it's very important for us as we think about our norms in the church world. For instance, whether it be, and I think they had mentioned this last week in the last video, whether it be something as simple as offering plates or giving buckets, whatever you have, we as a church leadership, we owe it to our people to think about the things that are commonly touched, whether that be door handles, offering plates. For me, it's even thinking about even whether it be a Connect card or Next Steps card with the pen, just like Rachel had mentioned, even writing utensils and stuff. We have to be mindful of those kind of things as we set an environment that's not only safe, but sanitary, just as you said, Richard, but where we're also not making people feel uncomfortable based on what is comfortable for them. So that's really a lot of the lens we're looking through right now. And honestly, I would also encourage anyone watching this, I agree with Rachel. For the most part, we can write this narrative. We can write how it looks for us to re-enter, and that is a blessing, and we should utilize it as such. To where we can be very wise in how we re-enter. Each congregation is going to look different. Each church is going to look different, and that's okay. So we as pastors and church leadership, I believe, should show support to each other in whatever decision we make. But also, I think it'd be very wise to speak to the people in your community, to speak to law enforcement, speak to mayor or anybody that you can to discuss your plans with them and see how they feel about how that impacts the community around you. So that would be my big encouragement. Think a lot about both platforms of people, the people you have, the people in your community, because we should want them watching how we respond and be patient and flexible with how we write the narrative of starting back to have church. And also, I think it's just a great opportunity to show a whole nother platform of love and understanding for people. So I hope that explains enough.
Good. That's great, Stephen. Thank you. And thing that you're underscoring, both of them, we all are, is that there's no experts on this.
Right.
We're all students, right? We're all learning. Mm-hmm. So what you said, Stephen, was spot on, that everyone's putting their plan together. As you put it together, the best thing you can do is to honor those other governing authorities around us and let them know, not only let them know, but get their advocacy so that there's no tug of war and no battles that we have to fight that are not necessary. And I think that also shows the reasonableness that God calls us to operate with one another.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
You know, as we've heard really great advice on the medical side and some things, just, I mean, cleaning pens. I mean, let's be realistic. Who really thought? With Stephen bringing a unique perspective, being with Awake in Somerville, and then of course there's Awake in Charleston, yeah. And so we're talking about a church that operates in both our associations, right. And so that helps. But let's kind of transition over to Terry. Terry, we've been talking about the sanitation piece, and of course that is what your company does. Yeah. Could you kind of help us with maybe some suggestions that we need to think about in sanitation before we open? And to ensure that our buildings that have been utilized before the pandemic are safe and secure and sanitized correctly, and then maybe talk to us about what daily and even weekly cleaning looks like, and maybe even some suggestions for during the service. If anything you might want to add there would be great.
Okay. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the time, and I'm going to learn so much from your other guest on here. It's going to be helpful to me too. So some of the things, one important thing that you guys, you probably already know it, but to bring all your congregation back, you don't necessarily have to go in and clean everything in your church. Now, I think that's a kind of a misnomer, that they feel like you have to go in and you have to sanitize and disinfect every inch of the church. But actually, the virus dies. You know, it, from what we can tell, you know, it's, it lives on cardboard for about a day. It lives on fabric and, you know, chairs and your clothes for about 2 days. Now, I'm not an expert on this, but it's kind of, you know, Rachel's way better at that. Then it'll live on slick stainless steel surfaces, slick surfaces for 3 days, 4 days, from what we can tell so far. They might have even better, closer numbers. So with that being said, I don't think you have to come in and disinfect everything. If nobody has been in your sanctuary in a week, then everything dies. So you don't have to go and sanitize the whole sanctuary. In your offices, and y'all have been in and out, somebody's been cleaning. If you have your janitorial service, or if you have people within your church, your congregation members that are doing it, then where they are, that's, you know, wherever they go, that's kind of a, you know, a little runner. And if she picks up something, he picks up something, and he goes somewhere else, he could, you know, take it somewhere else. So you have to go and look and see what's been shut down. If your Sunday school rooms have been closed down, leave them closed down. When you open them up, they're going to be fine. So beforehand, you're pretty good. Go through and disinfect your doors, your bathrooms. And the odd thing is, you don't think about what everybody touches until you go through and you start doing spray disinfection like we do. And you're like, oh yeah, and then, oh well, I'll do this. And then you're like, oh my gosh, people touch everything. They touch everything. We do corners of your walls. We do walls and everything. So we'll do the corners because, oddly enough, when somebody goes by, and you'll notice yourself, you'll go by and you'll just kind of rub your hand across the corner like you're a toddler. I don't know why, but we do it. And you're like, who knows when somebody just went, you know, like this and just went right by the wall. And you're like, oh, gross now. Used to. Didn't even faze you, right? And you're like, well, a little bit of a germaphobe, but not bad. Now we're like, oh, I wonder if somebody touched that. Oh, I can't probably touch. Oh, well, now it's mine, so I can't give it back. Pins. We started carrying our own pins because now you go to sign in somewhere and you're like, well, I can't give it back now. So now everybody carries their own pin. You know, you grab your pin. I was never a pin carrier. I usually got stuck in my pants and I washed them. So I messed up your washing machine. So I don't do that. But now I carry pins. So with that being said, what you're going to have to start with is your different protocol on after everybody gets in. And usually, you know, I worked for Bethany United Methodist Church for several years. And so we did a lot of our own cleaning. And we'd clean every night. You'd have somebody come through. But every week, big deep clean, right? Everybody had different steps to do. So with this, though, with this coming, you're going to have to be more on a nightly kind of thing, or after activity, post-activity. Every time you have an activity, more than likely, I would say, put in your policies that you have to sanitize and disinfect. Now, one of the things that people question all the time, they'll say, you know, what's the difference between sanitizing and disinfecting? Well, when we're in spraying somewhere and somebody asks, you know, they'll say, oh, what are you doing? Is that safe? I say, oh, we're just sanitizing. Sanitizing is less threatening than when you say, oh, we're spraying disinfectant. Then they think we're out using weed killer to, you know, spray in their offices. And we're like, no, it's safe. So, but the difference is that, you know, you have Lysol, you've got Clorox. Both of these sanitize and disinfect. The difference is sanitizing kills bacteria. And Rachel can correct me on whatever I'm missing. So she's the medical person on there. But only bacteria. So disinfecting is killing bacteria and viruses. So it's a step above, and it takes everything to 100% kill zone. Now with this coronavirus, nobody right now can say that we kill coronavirus. The reason being is because nobody's released the virus yet to let anybody do any testing on it. And nobody wants to release it, right? You know, so we are on an approved list. We have so many, you can go online, you can find an approved list of companies and products that they use that are safe. needs to be EPA registered. And I'm sure Dan's going to go over that part. Needs to be EPA registered so that you know it's safe. And, you know, you have a license to be using that product and using it the correct way. And then when you do that, you got to figure out the best way to use it. And I think you really got to teach your people, because people say, oh yeah, yeah, I've been using Lysol for years. You know, I just take the wipes and we just rub over everything. Actually, not true. You never really looked in the back of the Lysol box or the backs of the Clorox box. They'll say it's got to stay wet. What, like, these are the best. Clorox and Lysol wipes are the quickest. Take that, let them wipe it, let it be wet, tell them to read the back of the box, and then leave it. Don't wipe it off. Don't dry it. Don't go through, because a lot of people wipe and dry right behind it. And you got to leave it on there to kill it. You got to kill whatever's there. Some sprays, you're doing Lysol spray, it's got to stay on there 10 minutes. Just read the back. That's the big difference. It's been there forever. Nobody ever reads the back. I never did. So I'm like, oh, Lysol spray, it kills. Oh, good. No, that's not the way it works. So those things, you got to train your people, and you think it's not rocket science, but you got to know what you're doing. I would have like a, you know how you have teams, you know, at Bethany, we always had teams. We had greeters, we've got, you know, people taking the ties and passing the plate, and, you know, I'm on this team, I'm on that team. You're going to have to now start a committee, and it's going to be a, you know, you can call it whatever nice word you want to call it, but you can have the clean team, you can have the dream team, whatever you want, but they're going to have to be the ones who, I volunteered this month, and after every activity, I'm there, clean up trash, and go through and wipe. And you're going to wipe, just walk them through. And also, as you can also take a video as everybody's coming in the church when you open it up. Just sit there and take a video, and then you'll see what everybody touches. And you're like, really? I just saw 50 people touch the handrail. Yeah. They just went right up. Now people will be a little bit more careful, because I know now I used to touch everything. I would pick up something and I go, oh, what's that got in it? You know, and I put it back down. Now I'm like, can I see that with my glasses? Because I ain't touching it. You know, I'm at that age. I'm like, oh, don't touch it. You know, I got to walk with my hands in my pockets, my arms crossed, because I just touch. Not anymore. So it might be a little bit easier, but bathrooms are huge. People forget, you know, they get in bathrooms and you get in the privacy and you just do whatever. Well, that's the nasty place. So you better get in there and have your clean team, your dream team in there cleaning the bathrooms, handles, not just handles. People open the doors. They grab the doors. They got to wipe down the sides of the doors. You got to do all of that. Then, so that's your daily thing. Some people right now, some of the businesses that we treat, they have a team that goes through four times a day. And every 2 hours during their 8-hour work shift, they're going through and wiping. Now that's when, like, I do medical offices, I do doctor's offices, car dealerships, a couple churches. So that's with, depending on the flow of traffic, the flow of people that you have. Now, just depending on what you got. If you don't have anybody from Sunday to Wednesday, great. Schedule somebody. You know, it actually gives a little bit of time to die down, but schedule somebody, you know, before your service on Wednesday night, or, and just doing your offices every day, a couple times a day. But somebody has to have the responsibility to do it. Mainly, that's what I have found, because if you don't, you just don't get it all. You know, you kind of, oh, I thought you were doing it. I thought you were doing it. Nah, you know, we work better when I'm accountable. This is my month, my week, my whatever. And you'll find people really want to do that. And all they have to do, now Rachel may correct me on this too, is wearing your gloves and wearing your mask when you're cleaning. And really the mask, because you're in there by yourself, it's not like it can jump up off the table and get you. Because like Rachel said, it's a, you know, it carries through the air. It's, you know, through mucous membranes and you sneezing and that kind of thing. So it's not like you can come in afterwards and catch it. What they catch it is if they do the handrail and then they move their mask and go, oh, I got an itch, and then they put it back. that is like, that's the worst thing. So they got to leave that mask on. So, you know, train them to do that, but also make them feel at ease that they're not going to get it as long as they wear their gloves and their mask and take their gloves off the proper way, inside out, and throw them away. And so that's the best thing. Then, you know, BioPure is a disinfection service. There's a couple other services out there that work with cleaning companies. I would look right now. I would try to find people that did this before. I call it pre-COVID, and we're going to be here. We were here pre-COVID. We're going to be here post-COVID, like post-war kind of thing. And right now, it's kind of war on germs. That's the way we are. You know, where our slogan is "Got germs? You know, call us." So it is kind of a war on germs, and we think the germs are battling us, but we're going to win. And so what we want to do is check with somebody that was doing this before COVID. Their prices are going to be better because that's their niche. That's their thing. If somebody jumped in the middle and say, "How long have you been doing this?" You know, and they say, "Oh yeah, well, we just bought a machine. We're going to do it." They're just in it for the time, and they're going to try to really gouge you for money. And working at Bethany for six, eight years, money, everybody's working on a budget that's right there. You know, we'd have our budget committee meetings, and we were always, you know, take a little, give a little, take a little, give a little. Well, this is going to be a whole nother budget line item for you guys, and that's going to be important. Don't let anybody charge you astronomical amounts. Really needs to be somewhere depending on square footage. Most people charge by square footage, so this will help you guys. Anything probably less than 7 or 8 cents a square foot is good. Try to get them down to that. We charge 3 to 4 cents a square foot because it's just us. So what you want is a company that does it monthly. And during this, you're going to have to do it probably when your congregation comes back. I would say probably weekly, because what disinfection companies do is y'all, when you're cleaning companies, you have germs that are like this high. We come in and kill everything to zero. Then with your congregation, your staff, germs start growing back, but the baseline is a lot lower. So you can, with your cleaning guys, you can keep the baseline really low, but you can't get it back to zero again until the disinfection spray service comes in again. But you always want to keep your baseline low. If not, it's really high, and then your cleaning people are always doing this, but it never gets it down to zero. So that's the difference. You may want to try to get that into your budget line item. Spraying every week as this kind of slows down, spraying every 2 weeks, and then go to a monthly thing. Spray your main areas. If you don't go back to Sunday school and you don't have to do your Sunday school classes, just say you want your sanctuaries clean. You just want your offices clean because that's where our employees are. If you're running a daycare, get somebody to come in. They spray all the toys. They spray everything. And that's really good. Even though your daycares are doing everything possible, cleaning Clorox, washing them, rinsing them, still I would have somebody come in. You know, as much as your budget can allow, I would do that for a little while. It works for one thing. It's safe, the second thing, but you're giving your congregation peace of mind. You're like, look what we're doing to keep y'all safe, because we want to see you again. We want you back. And the people who are going to wear the mask, they're the ones going to go, look what they're doing for us. I'm so excited. So when they leave, they're going to feel good. And that not only by your service and what you've said during the service, but they feel safe coming to see you guys and safe when they leave.
Well, Terry had a great point about caring for others. This is what it's about. It's not just about being experts at cleaning. It's just a matter of how do we care for people right around us, right, being stewards.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, she brought up another great point about giving them peace of mind for safety.
Right.
So, Dan, we would like to maybe ask you a few questions about some of the chemicals that are being used, some safe storage practices, some dangers of maybe mixing the wrong stuff. And, you know, you shared with me the other night when we were talking, about the way some people mix chemicals and then the fact that they have little to no value, and people don't realize that. So if you could just take a few moments to speak about some of those issues, that would be great.
I appreciate y'all giving me this time. Yeah, and I've scratched a bunch of notes real quick. A lot of the chemicals out there now will tell you it combats the coronavirus. The biggest difference, like what I sell, I've got 2-minute ready mix products, 5-minute. concentrated and 10-minute concentrate, and the difference price in time. And the 10-minute contact time helps combat the coronavirus, and the 5 and the 2. It just depends on how quick you need to clean and safe products. A lot of our stuff is neutral pH. A lot of people, like I said, I've run across people, they'll go, well, I can use a little bit of Dan's disinfectant, a little bit of bleach, and a little bit of degreaser. You don't want to mix chemicals really ever. We just had a seminar about cleaning carpets, and I thought about church sanctuary. And they'd said basically the best way to do it is to go in to clean your carpet with a carpet cleaning machine. Then you go back with a sanitizer or disinfectant. It's neutral pH, won't hurt nothing. And you can put the proper product in the carpet machine. Then you sanitize or disinfect your carpets if you want to. The shelf life on your products, if it's still in the bottle with a closed lid, should, you know, a lot of companies will say a year or 2 years. Once you get exposed to air, then that's when you start losing your shelf life. Mine products sometimes last 7 days to 30 days, depending on how they're open and mixed. Bleach, if you mix that, it's good for 24 hours. And then you get into, and this is where it just kills me, people don't, they'll go, well, I can go get Clorox. Well, there's different strengths of Clorox. And they say, well, 2 ounces or 4 ounces, whatever it is, it's still only going to last about 24 hours. And like you said, with the wipes, another thing they tell us, you know, spray it down, wet the surface you need to clean, wipe it down, then spray it again and let it sit for 10 minutes. And wet. It has to stay wet for 10 minutes. Got some people think, well, I can use bleach, and bleach may be hurting my disinfectant. And you may be just making a mute point, thinking you're, you know, stronger and worse smelling. Oh, gosh, smell that. It's just, it must be really killing it. No, it's just the perfume. So it's amazing some little things I've run across that people think. But yeah, any other questions? Or
that's great, Dan. I appreciate that. That's, again, all this practical information. Who would have thought that this would be, like, pertinent information for people to know, and for churches in particular to think through, not just vacuuming and cleaning up a space, but really thinking through every bit of it. I think one thing also that's very important, and Rachel, I'd love for you to maybe pick back up a little bit on this conversation, is the idea of spatial distancing. So as churches come back together, you know, you go to a convenience store, you go to Walmart or Lowe's, wherever, and you got those dots on the floor, right? Now it's 6 feet apart. So what are some of the things that churches need to be thinking about from the spatial distance standpoint that we need to think about? And maybe, Stephen, you can jump in there too to talk about some things that you all are trying to process of how that should play out.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I think that's going to be something we're going to be faced with dealing with for not just the next couple months, but for a longer duration of time. And I shared on our call last week, I saw somebody I haven't seen in over a year, and out of just habit, I went and hugged them, and that's going to be very, very difficult. We're in a church world, we thrive off that, and I know I do every week of looking forward to seeing people I haven't seen all week. So, you know, some of this might be creativity on the staff's part of maybe, and I'm just thinking out of the box here, but maybe it's, you know, I feel like when we share things on social media, or really like before we enter moving into a new movement, a lot of like publicity and a lot of engagement on that, of maybe it's making something fun about, you know, tapping each other's feet for greetings and not shaking hands, or something creative. I don't know, something that could be implemented to make it fun, because it's something that we're all going to deal with. And again, it's not going to disappear. It's going to decrease a little bit as we get in the hotter months, but it's going to continue, especially when it gets back to cold again and fall and winter. And it's going to be something that we're going to be faced with for quite some time. We're probably not going to have a vaccine for another 6 months or so, and that's if it's expedited. So we're really looking at a longer duration of time for this. So I think channeling our inner creativity, which I've been just impressed from our nation, our businesses, our churches, of just the creativity that's already happened from this. It is going to be difficult to remain 6 feet. 6 feet is a guesstimate. So 6 feet, the whole reason why we say 6 feet is because that's the predicted distance in which a droplet comes out of your mouth. So 6 feet, if you were to cough, that's probably the duration it would be before it hit the person beside you. So that's the whole reason. Now, a thing that is important to remember, you know, keep keep it in the back of our minds. It's not an airborne virus. So like tuberculosis is considered airborne. So airborne viruses kind of linger in the air. And as Terry mentioned about the cleaning bit, I liked that, Terry, when you said they touched something and they wiped their face. That's more important with a droplet, because the droplet is a piece of saliva, essentially, and it gets easily transferred to your face, especially. So it's important to remember, if they're not actively coughing, there's no droplets being expelled, right? So the 6 feet distance is just easier to tell people and everywhere on the media. Now, an important thing to keep in mind too is mask usage. I think that's going to be something that churches really need to consider. And I think another great thing to do is maybe even, I think any way to encourage or empower people in the community to want to contribute. They want to contribute to healthcare providers. They want to contribute to church members. People are very crafty in their sewing skills. I am not one of those, but I know there are people out there and people want to help. So I think some of that might be that people in the congregation want to make hundreds of masks. And that might be something that we give out at the door. I think cloth mask, it's protecting you. It's not protecting you from the virus. It's preventing those droplets that I talked about from coming out of your mouth. A mask traps it in. So it's important if you're handing that out, that's preventing, if you're not able, because let's be honest, it's going to be hard to, unless you're wearing a hula hoop around your body, to always remember that you're 6 feet away. So if we're keeping those masks in place, that's really going to be some extra protection. And I can't, knowing the church environment that we're always in, I know that would be something that's going to be tempting. So I would recommend that. So recruiting whoever is willing to donate a cloth mask into the community, maybe handing those out, even maybe doing that outside of church is possible, but maybe even just having our greeters, as Terry mentioned, I think having different teams in place is going to be critical. And I think that would just be part of the greeting team of, you know, even going back open to the doors again, of not even having the risk of touching it, because that's one less thing to clean. If we just prop the doors open, I know in the South that is just killing our AC, but it's preventing people from spreading the virus a little bit more. So instead of having somebody who would be typically like the door opener greeter, maybe their job is to hand out masks to people in the congregation. I really think that's going to help contribute. If you are in a environment where you have pews or chairs and you are deciding to meet in the congregation, I think keeping that distance, maybe even taping off or putting signs in between chairs where they're blocked. If you're with your family unit, you've been probably closer than 6 feet. So it might be the people that you live with, you're blocked. You know, obviously Stephen and I we're not going to sit at 6 feet together, because we obviously are married. So we sleep in the same bed together. So I don't expect in the service, we're going to be 6 feet apart. So we would be sitting together, but you know, my neighbor down the street, we would be 6 feet from each other. So I think that's important too. Not every single person needs to be 6 feet, and church won't be enjoyable at that point. So your family unit can stay together, but as you look with other people that you don't live and eat with on a daily basis, they really should be at least 6 feet apart. So I think it's going to be creative, maybe alternating rows. Maybe it's looking at bringing in service at different times or having multiple services so we lessen the amount of people, which will lessen the spread. If you have somebody who becomes sick after maybe one of the services, they might not have symptoms on Sunday, but let's say Wednesday they start to feel sick. What they do in healthcare, the first thing that their healthcare provider is going to ask, who have you been around? So if you're able to remember that you were in the 9 o'clock service and we're keeping track of attendance, then that's going to have to be something we're looking at too, because you're going to want to know, who did I come in contact with at that 9 o'clock service? Because I've not only put my family at risk for this, but I had 5 different conversations pretty in depth with some congregation people in the congregation, and I did hug one of them, or they did sit next to me, or I wasn't wearing a mask or whatever. So I think it's important to maybe start with multiple services with smaller, just purely not only to decrease the spread, but so we can keep track of where it's coming from. So, yeah.
That's great. Lot to think through on the spatial thing, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a new day. Yeah. It's a new day. Yeah.
Yeah. Even keeping attendance.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, because if unfortunately someone does test positive with COVID-19, we have to be able to have good information That was excellent. Thank you. The information has, I think, been very valuable today.
It really has. Yeah. Stephen, as a pastor, maybe you have a final thought you've been thinking about that you'd say, hey, this would be great. Again, churches, as we think through this, one final thought that may help us just to think kind of as our next step.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much good information that's been shared on here, and thank you to each one of y'all for even the things I've learned from this call. And, as we think about our normal church services, what normal looked like for us before COVID-19, the biggest encouragement I have is that we really have to strive to be accommodating and flexible. It's one of the big questions we at Awakened Church are asking ourselves is, if we do have to have so much distancing between people, and I mean, at some point there's a scale where it tips to, is that actually enough value to be gathered together if we have to be so restricted? And every church is navigating through that, and every congregation is going to have a different answer, and that's okay. One of the things is with the flexibility is just thinking about, as pastors, there's a certain amount that we want to challenge the people that God's trusted under our care. And that includes us. As pastors, we don't have all the answers. We also fully understand that we ourselves are weak, and we have to be pushed to an uncomfortable place to be able to actually experience growth. And so one of the big things there is where that was, it seemed easier before COVID-19 to even do, let's say, like a meet and greet in the service, or just encouraging a team member to almost drive really hard to engage in a conversation with the first time guest. We're going to have to be really flexible as church leaders, understanding that a lot of that's going to have to look different. But the one thing that won't look different is this is just creating a whole new opportunity for us to express and show love to the people that are not only coming to our church, but the community we're in. That in itself will look a little different of how we show that love. But as we look at those things, that's really the big thing we're looking at is what do we want the feel and the experience of our service to be. And a lot of that for us at Awakened Church is just determined that's going to be a big factor on determining when we decide to gather as a large group gathering again, based on what we're seeing in the community around us, based on the chart and the amount of cases, and what would the experience be if we gathered even this Sunday? What would that experience be? Let's question that and think about what's best for our people. So it's just going to be a lot of flexibility and accommodating.
That's great. Well, you all have been so helpful today. The things we've talked about is wisdom and witness, wisdom and witness. So practical wisdom that you've given. And like Steve, you were talking at the very end, the witness that we have to other people around us. What we're going to do is we're going to provide connection points, resources that you've shared with us. We're going to put that all on our website so that you can just go to those websites, get information, contacts of those that have been on this panel today. It'd be a great way for you to reach out and just ask some more questions. So we're so glad for the opportunity to serve and to be a part of this call with you. We pray that God uses these practical steps as you look at the gauges on your dashboard and know how to drive this new car that we're driving, all the same, everyone's in the same boat. I pray that God uses it for you today. God bless you.
Thank you.